The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from teenvogue.com and kidspiritonline.com. Our first article today from teenvogue.com. Ozempic is highlighting how we link our worth to our body size. This article was written by Amanda Richards on January 25th, and there is a note. Weight Limit is a series that examines the rise of weight loss drugs like Wegovy and how they impact young people. In this op-ed, Amanda Richards explores how fatness fits into the Ozempic era. For most of my life, my understanding of fatness has swung like a pendulum between two contradictory states. On one side, the obesity epidemic, wherein fatness is a public health crisis with no end in sight, a risk factor for disease, or a disease in and of itself, a sordid fate that everyone in the Western world is destined to meet if we don't stop eating fast food and sitting in our stupid little chairs. On the other side, the end of obesity, the hopeful promise of the eradication of fatness, made by whichever over-the-counter drug or workout routine or diet plan was having its 15 minutes that month. Today, that promise takes the form of Ozempic and other glucagon-like peptide 1, GLP-1 drugs, including Wegovy, Mounjaro, and Saxenda. One incredibly expensive shot or pill per week, and you too can fix your fatness problem, perhaps more easily than ever before. Of course, that's not the exclusive purpose of each of these drugs, nor is it necessarily the most important one. GLP-1s are undeniably life-saving medications for millions of people living with type 2 diabetes, and studies demonstrating how the drug lowers blood sugar and regulates insulin are nothing short of extraordinary. When it comes to weight loss alone, though, these drugs can feel like more of a gray area. There is a lack of long-term research about the drug's safety effects. The drug has generally only been studied in individual patients for a one-year period, and increased risk for intestinal obstruction peaks around the one-and-a-half-year mark. Then, of course, there is the way we've decided to collectively engage with the idea of a drug like Ozempic, and how that discourse reinforces the narrative that fatness is a problem that needs to be fixed. Heralded as a drug that could spell an end to the world's obesity epidemic, Ozempic and drugs like it are often presented as the fat person's ultimate, obvious cure for, well, themselves. And if you're not willing to embrace this seemingly simple solution, this injectable white knight sent to rescue you from fatness, then what exactly is wrong with you? Like many other fat people, I am uncomfortably familiar with that sentiment. Over the years, I've often felt like my body was part of the problem, just another pudgy piece of evidence that society was succumbing to its fate. I spent my teenage years journaling about how much I hated myself, took the over-the-counter weight loss pills, and committed, quit, and recommitted to a weight loss-driven exercise routine more times than I could count, beating myself up more mercilessly each time I failed to become thin. I spent my 20s with the pursuit of thinness in the back of my mind at all times, convincing myself that my body was just one more promising weight loss plan away from finally being fixed. In my late 20s, I learned about body liberation and fat acceptance, and spent my 30s trying to unlearn my own internalized fat phobia, attempting to leave behind the idea that my mere physical existence required a solution. And just when I thought we might be making progress in terms of how we collectively view fatness, the pendulum swung again, and in walks Ozempic, promising a relatively safe, though who knows, and eventually affordable path to thinness for anyone who wants it. With its arrival comes the assumption that it's something everyone, specifically everyone fat, should be excited about. But what happens if a fat person doesn't want Ozempic? What will it mean if you can access something described as a magic bullet for thinness, but choose not to? How will society interface with a group of people who live inside the physical manifestation of the problem, while refusing to participate in the solution? I realize that right now, these questions are somewhat rhetorical, though given recent history, I think I can guess at the answers. It's a slightly more subtle iteration of the messaging we've seen around weight loss for years. The solution to your problems is right at your fingertips, should you choose to accept it. It doesn't matter if it's an exercise routine, a magic pill, a specialized diet plan, or a nationally televised screaming act from a celebrity trainer. Yet another solution for fat people is coming, and it's up to us to use it. Fatness, this tells us, is a personal failure, as is using these solutions and still being fat. Each new so-called cure is a reminder that, despite a promising turn toward size acceptance and radical inclusivity in recent years, we never quite figured out how to be okay with fatness as a choice to make or not make, a morally neutral state of being that's at its most dangerous when it's being used against us. And speaking of that morally neutral state of being, I have noticed something else strange at play, something about Olympic discourse that is different. While everyone seems to be talking about how many people are using Ozempic, we don't hear much from people actually using it. In the past, it was commonplace to brag about your diet, your exercise routine, your commitment to making your body the absolute best it can be. Doing so was seen as righteous and good, the kind of thing that garnered praise and served as perfectly acceptable conversation in almost any environment. These days, it sometimes feels like people are quietly getting thinner right before our eyes, morphing into smaller versions of themselves without any mention. And when that happens, the hushed whispers about whether or not they're taking Ozempic seem to follow. I'd like to believe that this is because we've finally gotten to a place where we recognize people's health choices as their own, that we've collectively evolved to a point where bragging about the pursuit of thinness is no longer the status quo. Unfortunately, it more often feels like the chatter about who is or isn't on Ozempic is the result of yet another pendulum swinging between two states. Ozempic as a moral imperative to anyone who needs to lose weight, and Ozempic as a way out of fatness that made it all too easy. All of this considered, it's clear to me that the rise of GLP-1s like Ozempic might change the course of public health in myriad ways, and many of them are wildly positive. That said, they'll do exactly nothing to relieve us from our complicated understanding of the role fatness has in our society or within ourselves. Whatever choices we make along the way, though, are not the problem. It's how we judge those choices that keeps the pendulum swinging. Our next article from KidSpiritOnline.com. Courage can change us. This article was written by Dravika Parikh on July 5th. Whenever we hear the word courage, the first thing that comes to mind are the martyrs who gave up their lives for their countries or the soldiers fighting at the border. But have we truly paused and reflected to ask ourselves, what does courage mean outside of this definition? Courage doesn't need to mean speaking against someone or facing your fears. Rather, courage can be as simple as owning up to yourself and learning how to problem solve in a difficult situation. Courage is something that everyone has access to, but very few utilize it to its optimum potential. It helps you realize the abilities you possess and helps you step out of your comfort zone. I realized this quite recently. My first experience with inspirational courage was a profound journey. In the Riverside School, where I learned about the world and myself, grade 6 got a client project that would help us learn field skills and professionalism. Our class was fortunate to have our client project alongside the citizenship program with the Prabhat Education Foundation, which is an NGO with a vision to have all children and adults with disabilities lead a dignified life in society. With the need for more inclusivity in mind, our grade partnered up with Prabhat to enhance our perspective. We hosted the founder of Prabhat at our school and asked questions about the center. The founder spoke about the pre-vocational skills they teach that are required to get a job that provides food, shelter, protection, and happiness for families. At the time, their main focus was to teach the Prabhat youth how to cook and serve at a cafe or restaurant. The first thought that came to our minds was, how can we add to this legacy already created by the Prabhat youth? The client shared his needs with us, and we became excited to lend a hand to this cause. We thought that we would be the change makers without realizing how it would change us. Before designing a cafe for our Prabhat youth buddies, we wanted to interact so we could understand how it felt to be in their shoes, which would broaden our chances of elevating one another. Our first interaction was not easy and was rather awkward. Neither group wanted to break the ice first, and all of us were quite taken aback by the sudden meeting. Even though some said they were okay, most of us felt quite uncomfortable. When it was time to go home, we did a reflection on our first interaction, and a lot of us didn't say our honest thoughts. We concluded that to understand their perspective, we would need to step into their shoes to have an experience where we could understand and empathize with their various special needs. Our client project took 7 months to complete, and we learned a lot in the process. To culminate this program, we wanted to involve our parents to engage with our buddies. We invited them to several activities planned for the parents and buddies. Observing our parents as they got to know the buddies reminded us of ourselves in our first interaction, nervous, scared, clueless, and frozen. It was my duty to energize the two parties. Since it was the festival of Holi, we enjoyed smearing colors on everyone, and we were able to close our year with this special memory. Words are too limited to describe the feeling and ambiance of this moment. It was something to be treasured in our box of memories forever. The joy we felt with each other was more important than all the other emotions and thoughts we had. There was no fatigue, sadness, or melancholy, just epiphany and the euphoria of togetherness. But how is this courage? Isn't the dictionary definition of courage the ability to control fear in a situation that may be dangerous? Or is it about stepping out of your comfort zone? The four types of courage are intellectual, moral, disciplined, and empathetic. So the fact that our buddies, parents, and teachers did things out of their comfort zone to support us and push us was courageous. More than that, the courage that our Prabhat buddies show on a daily basis to fight against society and make names for themselves is a struggle. But their courage is a never-ending waterfall, and we get a spring of courage from them. My favorite quote about courage is by Ryan Holiday. Courage calls each of us differently, at different times, in different forms. But in every case it is, as they say, coming from inside the house. So let life throw its obstacles and flow its way. Just continue sailing through it on your boat of courage. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Coachella 2024 lineup. See all headliners and performers here. This article was written by Najira Perkins on January 16th. Get ready to party in the desert with the biggest names in music. One of the biggest music festivals in the world is back, and the Coachella 2024 lineup has arrived with some exciting headliners billed. Lana Del Rey, Tyler the Creator, and Doja Cat will head up the iconic festival when it returns to the Empire Polo Club grounds in Indio, California this spring. Other notable acts performing this year are No Doubt, Peso Pluma, Lil Uzi Vert, Atiz, Peggy Gou, Young Miko, Sabrina Carpenter, Skepta, Tyla, Flo, Tinashe, Suki Waterhouse, Chappelle Roan, Chloe, Ice Spice, Sublime, Bleachers, Grimes, John Batiste, Le Seraphim, Blixt, Kevin Abstract, Ray, J Balvin, Jhené Aiko, Kurang Bean, Lil Yachty, Renee Rapp, Bebe Rexha, Coi Leray, Nav, Thames, Victoria Monet, Taking Back Sunday, 88 Rising Futures, Olivia Bean, BB Trix, and many, many more. General presale for Coachella starts on Friday, January 19th at 11 a.m. PT. You can now register for access to passes at Coachella.com. Last year, Bad Bunny, Blackpink, and Frank Ocean served as headliners, plus Blink 182, after Ocean dropped out of his second weekend performance due to two fractures and a sprain in his left leg. His long-anticipated Coachella appearance came 3 years after he was initially slated to headline, as the music festival postponed its 2020 event amid the COVID-19 pandemic. This year, for its third time back after a hiatus, the Coachella Valley Music and Arts Festival will again take place across two consecutive weekends, April 12th through 14th and April 19th through 21st. Lana Del Rey will kick the festival off on the Friday dates, followed by Tyler the Creator on both Saturdays, and Doja Cat will close everything out on both Sunday dates. Rumors about the trio of headliners swirled for weeks before Coachella made the official announcement. In early January, Dua Lipa was believed to be one of the headliners, but rumoredly passed due to scheduling conflicts. It's also rumored that Shakira was passed as a headliner by Coachella organizers, reports Hits Daily Double. The complete Coachella 2024 lineup features over 150 artists set to perform across six stages, with one of the most globally representative and genre-diverse lineups in years. Check out our full guide to the Coachella 2024 roster ahead and learn more about the big names hitting the stage. Courtesy of Coachella Valley Music and Arts Festival. Friday dates. Lana Del Rey. Lana Del Rey will kick off Coachella on April 12th and April 19th, though she's certainly no stranger to the festival. She first debuted there a decade ago in 2014 and was slated to perform again in 2020 before the festival was postponed due to the COVID-19 pandemic. However, this marks the 2024 Grammy nominee's first time serving as a Coachella headliner. Reflecting on her Coachella experience right after her 2014 performance, Del Rey shared in a backstage interview that it was pretty life-changing. Let's see what she says after she takes the main stage as a top biller. Saturday dates. Tyler the Creator. For the third time as a solo performer, Tyler the Creator will hit the stage at Coachella, this time as a headliner on April 13th and April 20th. His first appearance at the music festival happened in 2011 as a member of his former rap collective, Odd Future. He also performed in 2023 as a treat during Kali Uchis set, where the two reunited for their Flower Boy collaboration, See You Again. The announcement of Tyler's headlining Coachella sets arrives almost 1 year after he released the deluxe version of his Grammy-winning album, Call Me If You Get Lost. Over the last 2 years, He's treated fans to elaborate live performances of his album cuts at festivals like Something in the Wind and Lollapalooza, so there's no telling what kind of mind-blowing theatrics he'll bring to Coachella 2024, though we're sure they won't disappoint. Sunday dates. Doja Cat. Doja Cat will return to Coachella this year to perform on April 14th and April 21st. She made her grand debut in 2022, delivering a standout performance that could have absolutely served as a headlining set. This year, she'll have to top her previous spectacle with an even more breathtaking production. But how could she outdo the elaborate sets of her ongoing Scarlet Tour, you ask? Guess we'll just have to wait and see. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Dua Lipa calls for a ceasefire in Gaza, urges world leaders to take action. This article was written by Sarah Delgado on January 16th. In October 2023, Dua Lipa, alongside stars like Ayo Edebiri, Jennifer Lopez, and Melissa Barrera, made headlines after signing an open letter to President Joe Biden demanding a ceasefire in Gaza. Now she's doubling down on her stance in a new cover story. Speaking to Rolling Stone on January 16th, Dua Lipa got candid about her feelings on the Israel-Hamas war and why she's been so actively pro-Palestinian for years. "My feelings on displaced people are very real and raw, and it is a difficult subject to speak about because it's so divisive. But there is a world where you can feel for all lives that are being lost," Lipa said in her interview. "I feel so bad for every Israeli life lost and what happened on October 7th. At the moment, what we have to look at is how many lives have been lost in Gaza and the innocent civilians and the lives that are just being lost," the star continued. "There are just not enough world leaders that are taking a stand and speaking up about the humanitarian crisis that's happening, the humanitarian ceasefire that has to happen." Lipa went on to say that while it's probably easier to be apolitical about conflicts like this, and claimed that she feels most people don't want pop stars like herself to be political, she feels the need to speak up, not only because of the humanitarian crisis we are witnessing live, but also because of her family history. "My existence is kind of political. The fact that I lived in London because my parents left from the war," Lipa recounted. "I feel for people who have to leave their home. From my experience of being in Kosovo and understanding what war does, no one really wants to leave their home. They do it for their protection, to save their family, to look after the people around them, that kind of thing, for a better life. So I feel close to it. I think there's no kind of deep discussion about war and oppression. It just is something that we've seen happen time and time again. I feel like just being a musician and posting about something doesn't make enough of a difference, but hopefully just showing solidarity, which is sometimes all you feel like you can do, is important," Lipa said. She also took the opportunity to further clarify her stance. "And I have to say this, I don't condone what Hamas is doing, regardless of what that advertisement in the New York Times said in 2021. Every life is precious." ICYMI, Lipa called for an end to what she referred to as the ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people in 2021. Lipa, along with the Hadid sisters, was subsequently accused of anti-Semitism in an ad by Rabbi Shmuley Boteach of the World Values Network, run by the New York Times. After publicly calling out the publication for it, Lipa featured former Times editor Dean Baquet as a guest on her podcast to talk about the ad, which she further discussed in this new interview. "Speaking to an editor was important to me because I felt like I was put in danger and I was put in a place where my core values were completely flipped on their head," Lipa told Rolling Stone. "That really hurt because I felt like when I do want to speak about something, I hope that people will see it for what it is and that there is no malicious intent. Elsewhere in the interview, Lipa also admitted she's not interested in trying to be controversial or do something for a reaction with what she posts on Instagram, which RS notes is currently the only social platform she runs herself. And our next article from TeenVogue.com. Billie Eilish dedicates Palm Springs Award to anyone feeling hopelessness. This article was written by Ashley Carter on January 6th. Billie Eilish was completely vulnerable this week as she accepted an award at the Palm Springs International Film Festival. The musician and her brother-slash-collaborator Phineas O'Connell took the stage at the Palm Springs Convention Center on Thursday night to accept the coveted Chairman's Award for their song What Was I Made For? From the Barbie soundtrack. While accepting the prestigious award, Eilish got candid about her past struggles with feeling hopeless and dedicated the award and any future awards for the song to anyone who feels similarly. I would really like to say that this award and any recognition that this song gets, I just want to dedicate to anyone who experiences hopelessness, the feeling of existential dread and feeling like, what's the point? Why am I here, and why am I doing this? Eilish said. She continued, I think we all feel like that occasionally, but I think of somebody like me, with the amount of privilege that I have, and the incredible things that I get to do and be, and how I have really not wanted to be here. Sorry to be dark, Tam, but I've spent a lot of time feeling that way. Barbie director Greta Gerwig presented the two with the award, while other Barbie cast members, including Margot Robbie and America Ferrera, were also in attendance. I want to say to anyone that feels that way, be patient with yourself, and know that it's worth it all, Eilish continued. And I think it's good to be alive. What Was I Made For? Became a chart-topping hit and viral TikTok sensation after being released in tandem with the film last summer. The song plays during a pivotal moment in the movie as Robbie's character is trying to figure out her next step during an existential crisis. The song has been nominated for 5 Grammy Awards along with other major awards. In a recent interview with Vanity Fair, Billie Eilish and Phineas break down how they created the soul-crushing song, with Eilish explaining that she chose to sing it almost like you were just crying. If I can be honest, I feel like it's one of my best vocal performances I've ever given, she said. We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.